Welcome, friends, to the God Friended Me podcast by Fantastic Geek. My name is Matt, and joining me, as always, is Pete. Good day, Pete.
Good day, Matt. Good day, everybody. The God Friended Me podcast by Fantastic Geek. For the series ending episodes 221, Miracles, and episode 222, The Mountain, comes your way now.
Episode 221, Miracles, written by Robert Hull, directed by Victor Nelly Jr., and episode 222, The Mountain, written by your series co-creator, Stephen Lillian, and directed by your series co-creator, Brian Winbrandt. Pete, the ratings, perhaps less important now, but episode 221 coming in with a 0.6 rating, 6.4 million viewers, 222, a 0.5 rating with 6 million viewers even. Perhaps as a result of the show not making it abundantly clear to viewers that there was another episode on next. By the way, has the show ending roughly where it's been in average ratings, and certainly it has never gone back down to its series low from February, which was a 0.4 rating and 5.3 million viewers. So the show ending steady.
A great degree of confusion with the God Friended Me and the CBS promotion of this. Two brand new episodes, not, hey, this is it. This is the big finale. This is, it's all been building to this. Like, how did they not get the memo? And there was quite a bit of consternation on social media between Twitter and Facebook of the perceived fill of the time slot moving forward. Understand that the CBS movie is not going to be a primetime thing, you know, other parts of the year. This is a slot filler for now, because a lot of people are like, well, I can watch Raiders of the Lost Ark on Netflix. Why am I going to watch it on CBS? They're filling it for the space now.
Yeah. I understand CBS, you know, top down, why they're doing that with the CBS Sunday movie. And if that resulted in, let's do back-to-back hours of God Friended Me, you know, so be it. It was just strange that in the promotion, in every venue, the main promotion, you know, the main show account, the CBS, you know, .com, Twitter, things like that, nobody wanted to say it was a series finale. Yeah. Clearly somebody had the wisdom, if you call it a series finale, people will disappear. But then even within the episode, you already have 6.4 million viewers watching, and you end with, stay tuned for scenes from our next episode. So if you are somebody who's not necessarily tied into the social media of the show, and I think that you can be a big fan of a show and watch it every week and think about it as the week goes on, but not necessarily tied into it on social media or whatever it might be, can you tell people that there's another one next, not to end it the way you would any other time? People go, oh, I'm going to skip the preview, let me whatever, whatever. And then that's why you go down in the ratings for your series finale.
It was dubious, particularly with all the challenges in terms of bringing this series finale together. Quick update as far as our schedule. So we're going to be bringing you both episodes in this podcast. We're going to be doing a separate series look back, series wrap that'll be available next Monday. So anything you'd like to get in there as far as favorite moments, things you would have liked to seen for the future, etc., etc., get in touch with us. We'll give you the contacts as always, end of the episode. But what do you say we take the last, Matt? It's not an eightfold, it's 16-fold. It's eight for each episode.
I like to think of it as an infinite path.
There you go. There you go. Let's take a stroll through our infinite path to enlightenment about this episode. Countdown to disaster. It's the last day of the God account, unless the God Squad pod can save it. Miles is off to see Corey solo. Corey had wanted to get his code back, and since he couldn't, time to destroy it. Can't Corey see the account helps people? They see Corey's son, CJ, on the way out. He's been messed up since a skateboard accident a month ago.
At the park, Kara goes to see her mother. talking about the Adam breakup and that Kara's moved on. Meanwhile, Rakesh has a clue as to the corrupted friend suggestion. It's a Smith, perhaps Corey Smith. Rakesh sees CJ Smith step into a church. CJ wants to reflect and Miles wants to help. CJ admits to seeing an angel, but no one believed him. Speaking of which, Star Trek Discovery Season 2, now streaming on CBS All Access and available on Blu-ray and DVD wherever they're sold, and podcast by Fantastic Geek. Corey and his wife show up, and Corey is stunned. Why hasn't Corey listened to what CJ had to say about the angel? Corey counters with this: "Stay away from my family, Miles." The younger Finer goes to see the elder, and Arthur suggests Corey's father, Alphonse, could be brought into the loop.
At the oncologist's office, the doctor says Allie's tumor is shrinking. A lumpectomy is next. Miles shares the great news with Rakesh, and Zach's ready to help. It's needed, too. The account is 50% infected. Corey's ready to hear CJ's story about Corey's last football game. Alphonse didn't come to the game, and Corey threw a touchdown to win it.
The message seems to be about reconciliation between father and son, but can the account help? Miles thinks yes, especially since there's no earthly way CJ could have known the football story. Corey reflects on the impossibility of mending fences with his absent father. Knock, knock, an agent from the government is there to talk with Corey about unauthorized use of the DARPA mainframe. On the way out, Corey suggests his friend use a heat pack on his bug. At Allie's bar, Kara finds out, for the first time, that Allie's health is improving. They talk about Kara's romantic quandaries.
Back to Rakesh and Zach, the heat pack clue is a great idea. It'll isolate the uninfected code. At Arthur's office, Marcia, Corey's mom, needs to see Miles right away. Everything's falling apart, but Alphonse is in the CIA, as it turns out. The Finers go to the DOD main office, seeing Alphonse in the lobby. He's looking into Corey's case and can share more past security. Intercut is Corey being questioned. Alphonse admits to 20 years being an agent in the CIA. He missed his son's childhood. Back to Corey, the agents get a call. He's free to go.
In the lobby, Miles suggests father and son reconcile, then Corey's there. He's upset that his father has been brought into all of this. Corey takes a call. CJ's missing again, and this time it's Alphonse who has the lead on the boy. Alphonse had visited the boy in a coma, telling him things. They head to a local diner, and Alphonse and CJ formally meet, and everyone steps away so Corey and Alphonse can talk. Alphonse had been at that last football game, following his son from afar. For Corey, a page has been turned. He'll help save the God account.
Alphonse wishes he could give Corey more time, but, oh, nothing. At Identity Seal, the heat pack is working, and it's too late. The bug has gotten the main code. Miles bids them fix it, but they can't, not without the original code. If only someone could save the day. Rakesh has some of the account code. It's the basis for his soulmate app. Hope remains. Miles and Corey go for a walk and info share about Alphonse's CIA gig.
Later at home, Miles records a cast. He's seen a miracle, one we've created by ourselves. No, not Fantastic Geek. Miracles like Corey and CJ sitting down with Alphonse, mending fences. Intercut is Rakesh and Zach fixing the account, and Kara running into Mom at Catapult. Mom's got news. She's moving because her husband is being released from jail early, and they need a fresh start. Miles reminds his listeners that simple acts of kindness can go a long way. Knock, knock, Alphonse is there, giving thanks for the account. Miles admits he's not looking for the true source of the account, and Alphonse admits to grave health problems.
Cut to the future. 1 year from now, Miles is in the Annapurna Himalayas, getting to the bottom of the account. Back to the present day, Arthur is toasting to Allie's successful surgery tomorrow. Kara arrives and admits Mom and Liv are moving away. Miles gets a new friend suggestion. It's Allie.
At the hospital, Allie's filling out her paperwork and would like Trish to have medical power of attorney. The finer men arrive, shocked at the decision. Erica arrives with Allie's things, but where's Mom's Bible? Miles runs home to get it. At the Catapult offices, Kara and her mom touch base. They're still leaving New York City. Life in Cleveland is going to be great. But what about the fact that Miles still loves Kara? She sticks a pin in that. At Miles' apartment, the Bible can't be found. But in the meanwhile, can't Rakesh dig up info on Allie?
Miles, via voiceover, mentions finding the good book and racing back to the hospital. In the hospital, Arthur wishes he had been consulted on the power of attorney. Father and daughter reflect, and he promises to be the first face she sees when she wakes up. Rakesh calls with an update. Allie's heart defect, while small, could lead to a fatal outcome. With that, the subway car's brakes squeal. Miles falls, and he's out. After an act break, he's all right and helps a woman with a bloody nose. Worse, no one has a phone signal. They're running out of time and try to get to the control area.
In the hospital, the family is wondering about Miles, but they've got an hour. Dr. Chang arrives. They're ahead of schedule and starting soon. Back to the subway car. Off screen, Miles has saved the driver, and he and Kara need to divert everyone off the train. No one believes him, but there's Miguel, the window washer from mid-season, who overheard Miles from another car. Everybody listen to him. We're 50 yards from the station. They arrive at the hospital with everyone gone.
Miles and Kara find the family in the waiting area, and Arthur doesn't think Miles is here to stop Allie's surgery. Sorry, Miles. This is old news, and you can give her Mom's Bible when she wakes up. Miles wonders if the account was trying to stop him, and Rakesh shows up with Jaya. She's the doctor who consulted on Allie's case. The account likes Jeremiah 29:11, and Miles opens Mom's Bible to read it. There's a letter from Allie.
Miles reads the letter as Allie reflects on a life of love and connections and hopes to see her brother soon. Time passes and Dr. Chang arrives. There's been a complication. She shares news that a blood clot has appeared and they don't know if Allie will be all right, though the tumor is gone. Miles steps away, feeling the weight of the world. His father follows. What can be done now? Pray. Miles doesn't, but Rakesh notes that if Allie was the friend's suggestion, there must be a way to help. Miles sees his father praying and steps away.
Miles goes to an empty church, reflecting on what the account has been trying to teach him about faith. Maybe it's been trying to teach him that there is a God. He's called back to the hospital and Dr. Chang has good news. Thank God. Everyone hugs. Still, Miles is confused. Still, they go to see Allie, and it's all smiles all around. Miles preps what will be, for us, his final podcast. He notes the need to never stop, to keep going. Miles reflects on the next chapter while, intercut, Mom and Liv stop by the Catapult office as the last goodbyes start.
The voiceover resumes, and the romance has bloom. Ditto on Rakesh and Jaya, who got reconnected. As for Allie, she joined the seminary in the last year. Over a montage of past friend accounts, Miles recalls that it doesn't matter where we come from, that we're all in this together. Amazing things can happen. Miles relates that the account sent him to the mountaintop 1 year later to find out the account's origin. A young monk beckons him to come meet her. She's been waiting for you to end the series.
And now it's time to step into the confessional.
So, Pete, let's work backwards here. Stephen Lillian sharing with Deadline how and Brian Winbrand as well, I should say. They're both interviewed by Deadline, saying that they had only shot 5 days of this episode when the production was shut down due to coronavirus on Friday, March 13th. So I think we can grade this finale somewhat lovingly, with a little bit of patience, knowing that they kind of had to scramble for a couple of things. One, the ending. Two, the frame device. Yeah. Three, extra footage, which I think could explain, four, why you have a couple of scenes where maybe less than great camera work, or at one moment a zoom in the middle of dialogue. It's all because this was being done under the least charitable of circumstances.
With everything taken into consideration, I really feel people are going to look back at this finale and say, you know what, for the hand they were dealt, they played it admirably. Thank God, Matt, they had the mountain footage that they did not use in the pilot. And I think that it hadn't been used previously added weight to it. I had speculated with you, okay, it's 7-8 weeks in the past. Your show has been shut down. We need a shot to bring this all together to end the series. We've got to get Brandon Michael Hall. We're going to get him to a mountain in the Adirondacks. That's going to be our Himalaya mountain. The cameraman won't get too close. It's going to be a super tiny shoot. No, that was shot more than 2 years ago, and they were able to pull that out of their hat. It is frequently a series pitch, not even a request. It's kind of a requisite. When you go in to pitch a room, it is not at all unusual not to be asked, how's the series end? To be asked, how does season two end? If we give you this first season, what's your game plan down the road? And it's frequently a place where, creatives will and botch it. They had a plan to this point. They had a plan, given the number of articles today, to move past that. Principally, you know, how'd you like to be, you know, the Jaya actress? And, you know, you were going to be pretty much a regular in season three and become more of a role here. Disappointing in that regard. However, thank goodness they had the pieces here and there, and to get back to LA, to have to roll through the difficult punches and decisions to be able to do it and create a coherent series finale.
Similarly, I think the show can be forgiven for some of the moments of the voiceover, the frame narrative here, not being of the best recorded quality. It's something that jumped out to my ears in a number of scenes. Is that because maybe, you know, the actor is recording this from a closet in his house as opposed to, you know, a voiceover booth at a post-production facility, that sort of thing? This is not the time to focus on that being a negative. I think it's all, as you said, Pete, it's a net positive that the show was able to end on its own terms. I don't know that this was written as the series finale. Clearly it was not shot as one. I mean, my goodness, as we said, they did not finish filming this episode. I think that too could then explain some stuff like on the subway car, how it's in between other scenes off camera that the subway operator is rescued, and things like that were, you know, minor pacing issues. It's because they didn't have all the footage that they needed. I will give the show credit on this. We've talked for the entire length of the series, this question of will they or won't they confirm who's behind the account? Because can you confirm that we're in an atheist or a God in heaven existence? I think the show manages to have its cake and eat it too. Then on top of it, to have this thing that's been waiting for 2.5 years, it just seems fitting, albeit sad.
You know, one more bit about the production of it. I mean, for Brian Winbrandt to make his directorial debut with the finale and then have all these other challenges heaped upon it And yes, these are editing things, but as the director, as the co-creator and co-showrunner, you know, all these things to be doing. I mean, this wasn't baptism by fire. This was baptism by water, fire, hail, virus. And again, you know, hats off to them. I mean, we've been with Stephen Lillian and Brian Winbrandt. We did Alcatraz and we're super disappointed that they didn't get to continue and even give that story a sense of roundness, canceled at the end of a first season. And, you know, we would have loved to see more God Friend and Me, to have them at least get the courtesy of some kind of decision instead of, hey guys, you've finished editing 222, but guess what? Unfortunately, we can't bring you back next year. At least they got the ability to craft an ending. Is it the ideal ending? Is it the ending that they would have had if they had had a 7-season run? I think there's pieces of it. I think the idea of the mountain and the significance and everything there, and open to interpretation, as they talked much about, you know, who is she?
I suppose on the one hand, the she could be God Almighty. And I think, given that we're not going to get season 3 with the season 3 long mystery of who is the she, and that will finally be resolved towards the end of season 3, and you know, and it'll be another twist and turn, that kind of thing. I just kind of like the notion, at least from my own perspective on the world and religion and whatnot, I like the story arc that Miles the Atheist, through this path that we can't quite know, they're almost helped by this 1-year break in terms of how did he get there? It's a story untold. But that he goes on this journey from atheist to perhaps, you know, seeing the face of God.
I mean, the she could be God, the she, I mean, what they said it wasn't is some, you know, Steve Jobs-esque woman behind the account. That's definitely what it wasn't. I really like the read that it's his mom, and that maybe this year later, and actually, Matt, we have an email about this to read a little bit later, a really, really interesting take on you know, the very end of the show and really how things ended up.
I look forward to hearing more about that, because it begs the question, if he's meeting mom, is he meeting mom here or is he meeting her in the afterlife? In the interim, I think a little theorizing, a little analysis with this timeline of the show suspending production and then the cancellation coming later, I think it's worth, well, if the question is, why was it canceled? If it had moderate ratings but stable, why was it canceled? I'll just point listeners towards the fact that this is a production of Warner Brothers Television, which that means Warner Brothers needs to get its slice of the pie, in addition to CBS getting a slice of the pie. And it's cheaper to produce something in-house. And I wonder if that may have been a factor. I wonder if the fact that Warner Brothers Television now has an at-home network, which is to say HBO Max is launching next month. Maybe it was just business and CBS saying, we've got our streamer, you've got your streamer, now you're in the streamer business. We're not going to take an on-the-bubble show and we're not going to give it a pass. We're going to throw it back to you because there's more direct competition. We can't know for sure. Lillian Winbrandt certainly seemed graciously mum on the topic, didn't want to get into some of the larger studio politics and whatnot, which probably is the right call for them. But I think that was all of that could have been a factor in why this show with solid but lower ratings got canceled.
We had not as many friend suggestions physically come back to the narrative. I really did like the montage, and it was a sensible use of previous footage. You know, the number of people that they've helped throughout the 2 seasons. I was kind of surprised. No Simon, no Priya, no Henry Chase.
Well, it does make me wonder, you know, gone unaddressed in the interviews released today was if there was plans for an episode 223, which I'm leaning increasingly towards not, you know, for I'm sure listeners remember somebody claiming to be Violet Bean's grandfather had said so on Facebook. But had that been the case, that episode might have been a bridge to the next season. Maybe would have had those people come back for some kind of final capping of it. Heck, Pete, for all we know, it might have been, and I know obviously episodes are shot out of order, but hey, they're coming back at the end of the episode. We're going to have them show up on days 7 and 8 of the shoot, and then days, you know, half of day 5, 6, 7, and 8 all get axed. With the production being shut down. So for all we know, that was out there as soon as the end of this episode, potentially. But maybe that was in the plans for the Evergreen next time.
Granted, it's Miles' show, but I felt like, and again, it was a victim of circumstance, not so much of narrative. Kara was undercut quite a bit. Okay, so we get told in the voiceover narration, they got back together again. It turned into something more. They've never been happier. But what happens to Kara here? Her mom, her stepsister, and her stepfather leave. How about something about, remember the book she was going to work on with Simon and with Henry? Maybe like, something there. Oh, she got the top job at Catapult. It just felt like it didn't develop her story further. I felt like Rakesh got more, you know, all right, we get him together with Jaya and they are happy, and Ali, okay, she follows in her father's footsteps. Would have liked to know a little bit more about what happens to Reverend Finer. Does you know, he, you know, ride off into the sunset with Trish? That wasn't addressed at all. And I understand how many masters a finale in the middle of a pandemic unexpectedly has to serve. So it's a minor quibble, but I do think there had to have been a solve there somewhere.
I look back at this season. I know we're going to do a proper season wrap next week, but just to address your point on Kara here, I think of the metaphorical mountain that every character had to climb this season. You think of Allie, a much improved character because of the cancer storyline. You think of Arthur and his Trish v. Church struggle, which made up much of the season, and then, you know, him handling new responsibilities as bishop and so on and so forth. Miles, I think, needs a little bit less of a new story arc each episode, each arc, you know, because it's his show. Rakesh, ascendant in the world of Identity Seal, you know, love life versus work life, things like that. What was Kara's struggle? I mean, yes, she kind of intersected with the stepdad. Pete, was her big mountain to climb? Oh no, Miles is a super attractive man, and look, here's Adam, who's a giant model and not too bright, so she gets to be the brightest one in the relationship, and he's a hunk. Oh boy, Pete, that's just like all the other struggles everybody else is having, isn't it?
How about the Bible scheme in this final episode, Matt? The account likes the verse, and Allie has left a note for Miles at that verse. I mean, we need to get our analytic, our predictive analytics people on this, but what are the odds of where you leave your brother a note gets liked by this account and you find it?
There's two ways to look at that fact. I think one is the intended way to look at it, the original intent, and one is the final intent. When this was written, when this was shot, Evergreen was the possibility of more seasons, more story, more everything. And then, Pete, I would agree that it is a weak story moment. It is weak because there's really not a way that you can rationalize how an algorithm would know this, that as she sat, I'll editorialize here, but as she sat in a quiet room with no internet radio playing, no webcam, a watching, etc., and she handwrote this note with tears in her eyes and slid it into Mom's Bible, there's no way that the account would know that. So, old version, boo, it's poor writing. End result, though, if we're ending with, you know what, maybe there is a God out there. Maybe Miles is going to look upon the face of God or a prophet of the Lord. Maybe Miles is seeing Mom in heaven, you know, whatever that is. Maybe if the show is going to end on an optimistic kind of, you know, glory to the universe, then the account with a whisper in the ear from the Lord, then it's acceptable. I don't know that I love that as an answer in terms of a show which has kind of kept this rather secular divide, or that has kept the ball up in the air in terms of is it or isn't it, you know, of this earth or of the great beyond. But I think that there's your answer. If we land with the possibility of faith, then we can backtrack to this point here.
So not the first familial friend suggestion. You'll recall that back in season one, Miles was suggested to friend his uncle, who was having marital issues and some business problems and that to do there, and he was able to help him out. But I think, again, really can't go ignored here that the final friend suggestion is family, that the power of attorney, and then this scripture quote. So it's definitely a thread that might have, I mean, what does Allie go on to do, says the story. She gets into seminary. She goes on to become clergy. Is she potentially, if they build this down the road, has she been the one behind? Was this all an elaborate gambit to bring her brother back to the thing that she values in faith and to help him recognize it? Maybe not the same, but the goodness in humanity.
I think that though the show spent a lot of time giving a 50-50 argument towards faith or atheism, if you want an atheist show, go watch CSI, because they can tell you if it's type A blood, that means that Jeff didn't do it because he's type O negative or whatever. I think that the I'll say farce, I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, but the suspended disbelief that we have is that the show is having this debate back and forth. I think, though, for most of us, we recognize that the debate is happening in a world of the show where there is God above, where there is goodness, where we are really are all connected to each other in ways that we did not know. And I think that it's taking an optimistic pro-religion view. So I think that I don't want to say the show can be forgiven. The fact that to answer some of these concerns, we're ending up where the show has really secretly always been, which is coming from a place of a guiding force up above. I'm okay with that. I'm more than okay with that kind of being an answer, even if it is kind of like, well, the writing says it's supposed to be 50-50. That's been the farce of it. It's like watching a sports movie. Guess what? They win at the end of every sports movie. Even the movies where they don't, guess what? Adrian's better than beating Apollo Creed in Rocky One, like that kind of thing. You're a winner at the end, regardless. You just believe that they're going to lose along the way. I think same thing here.
You look back at the penultimate episode last night and a number of developments there that would have further influenced the story. Alphonse as a CIA operative yearning for more time that he doesn't have. So clearly a sense of urgency, not only for that story, but moving forward into what would have happened in the season 3.
it is interesting to think that most of what we saw, the vast majority of what we saw last night, was created in an optimism of environment where the story would continue. And not just in that kind of Hollywood writer's room, close the door, don't worry about the external stuff. When you're inside the fishbowl, here's what it's like. You know, I think that the ratings, irrespective of the whole Warner Brothers TV versus CBS as a network, if you take that out of it, and I think it's ultimately difficult to do so, but if magically the show got sold to CBS television studio and you can make the financials a bit easier to work, or if it was massively huge on Netflix, which I know is not the case because it's on All Access, or, you know, if only, I think there's a reasonable place where they could be setting up for season three. Let me turn that around though, Pete. What I find interesting is that they were able to shoot some of these, at least some of these things, like Allie delivering a sermon or whatever it might be. The fact that they were able to get footage of that, you know, maybe they were intending some kind of time jump for season three.
And then when you look at the number of times Zach has been in the story this season, you have to wonder if he would have kind of been a Robin to Rakesh's cyber Batman moving forward.
It is interesting to think that in the second half of this season, the show has been quietly remolding itself. I don't want to quite say prepping for season three, although perhaps some of that was being done in the last two episodes. I think that the way, you know, shows now no longer evolve by great jumps. You want it to have that more realistic feel to it. So you're going to, you know, you're going to say, boy, Zach's been around for a while. Oh, now he's a series regular. Oh, now it's announced he's going to be in 10 of the 20 episodes of season three. You know, oh, okay. Like, that's not out of the blue. Like, who's this weird, you know, new character? So I think that the show was growing in that direction. I would not have been surprised if we had more Zach. I know Lillian Winbrandt talked about plans for Rakesh and Jaya, not just to get married, but to have a child, and how that would place story pressure on Rakesh to grow up. And I think that would have been an interesting direction too. I don't know that it would have been absolutely riveting, but it would have been Rakesh's own route, the way, for example, Allie had a, you know, a interesting character challenge with the cancer. As always, I don't mean to downplay it, but it was fake cancer given to a fake character. Same thing with Rakesh. It would have been fun to see that path in the beginning of season three, where he's got to grow up.
What are they saying on the horn?
Pete, we go to Twitter. Some thoughts from our own cast O friends. We hear from James, is at Big Killin, who says, we were left with a great reminder of what the show has been. Solving the mystery would have ruined the journey. Two seasons was not enough, but I'm grateful for what we had. We also heard from JT Atkins. It's at JTA is me. I say to you what I tweeted to Stephen Lillian. Way to not do the overly conclusive and ultimately unsatisfying final episode syndrome. Nice mystery. Well done. We heard from Andre Yeager. It's at Dr. Polo 1983. I truly did not want to see who was behind the God account. I loved the fact that the final task was for Miles to get his faith back. Perfect ending to a great series. Wish it could have gone on longer. Somebody disagreed with him, by the way, Pete. Saying it was a lame show that needed closure. That's Diane FW. I think we can all disagree with Diane.
Come on. Such a Diane thing to say.
It classic Diane, who to my knowledge has never tweeted at us before, but did not like the end of this series. We hear from Peter. That's at Tweet Scala. Emotional throughout the two full hours. Thank you for doing this podcast. The show will hold a special place in my heart. Can't thank the guys, God friend of me, enough. For such an amazing show. And lastly, Pete, we heard from Fritz Klug. That's at Fritz Klug. He says, it was a lot. I was nervous during the first half on how it all come together and heading into the last section of the show, but it came together. Masterful job from the writers and producers given the hand they were dealt. It was a great ending to the show that leaves the main question from the beginning. Is there a God? The show wrapped up with a great message of how our actions and helping people are sometimes more important than what we say we believe. It leaves me wanting that season three they crammed in the last 5 minutes, but I'll take it. And the child and the she, staying mysterious to the end. I'll miss the show, but I'm thankful for two seasons that dealt with issues we see are so important now, but often aren't produced. Pete, I know you have an email in your inbox. What's it say?
Yeah, interesting here. Hey, Pete and Matt, wanted to drop you a line at the end of God Friend and Me's run, albeit too soon. Love the show and also wanted to thank you for your podcast each week. They became a great way to re-examine the episode. That said, I think there's some interesting dots to connect in the finale. First, our final episode count, 42 episodes. Second, you guys said there may have been part of a 23rd episode filmed. Both lost numbers. Not Fibonacci, but close. Is Miles dead at the end meeting God, just like at the end of Lost? You guys commonly point out Winbrandt and Lillian did Alcatraz, which was also produced by J.J. Abrams' Bad Robot. It's like you guys always say, it's all connected. Thanks again for the podcast memories. Call me Saeed Appleseed.
Wow. I definitely am. My heart is warmed at the idea of that as an ending. Now, that comes with the caveat that means that Miles would die, and I certainly don't want that.
Right.
But if that had been a planned ending, and again, this footage shot 2.5 years ago, but let's look at what the episode does give us. If in 1 year's time, Miles is a happier person, he's found love, the world around him has become a happier place, friends and family, strangers he's helped, new friends, etc. And through whatever twist of life, he has passed away and now is meeting whomever, whether it's God, whether it's a saint, whether it's his mother, but he's died at the end. That's an endpoint that gives me a weird sense of solace as well.
I know you had an email as well, Matt.
Dear Pete and Matt, one theory I didn't hear you guys talk about all season was the idea that Kara is wearing a shaitel. That is the wig worn by Orthodox Jewish women in order to cover their natural hair. I was reading about this on Facebook, and there's some convincing evidence that the actress has been wearing a wig for some time. It would have made for quite a twist for the secular Kara to come out as either having a Jewish past or to now be accepting a Jewish lineage. What do you guys think? Sarah from Winter Springs, Florida. So, Pete, your thoughts?
That is definitely a deep dive. I don't happen to really have the knowledge in terms of answering the question. I did see on Facebook groups throughout the season a number of people point out that it seemed as if Violet Bean was wearing a wig, but this is not at all uncommon in Hollywood, and it wasn't made to be a story point. Might it have been something they pursued at some point? Possibly, but I just don't know.
Certainly, to my eyes, it never occurred to me that she was wearing a wig. I know her hair color did change from the pilot into the first season and maybe since then, but I just kind of chalk that up more to either natural change of color or, you know, just choosing to dye it differently, either as an actress or a character or whatever it might be. But I guess that's one of those questions that that we will not have an answer for, unfortunately, as the seasons do not go on, as it turns out.
Helping us to provide answers to your questions, when we could answer them, of course, are the good people of patreon.com/fantasticgeek.
Pete, we are so proud to have spent this time being listener supported by all those who not just enjoy our podcast, but who have gone to patreon.com/fantasticgeek. to keep the bleeps and the bloops happening. You know, Miles makes it look so easy, but sometimes you got to go pay the pod man the pound of flesh, which is real American money. So thank you to everyone who has supported us and who continues to support us.
Takes just a dollar a month to get you behind that door there on patreon.com. You help us immeasurably. It will keep our fantastic geek podcasts of God Friended Me forever on our websites and on Apple Podcasts. So they will always be there for you to go back and listen to. Can't contribute. You can always go to Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating. Takes seconds. Leave us a review. Takes a little bit longer right now as we are getting ready for the 7th and final season of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We're awaiting a date on the 3rd season stream of Star Trek Discovery. We are raffling off a Rise of Skywalker Star Wars digital download code that we're going to be giving away on a month from today, Matt, on the night of the 7th and final season premiere of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So everybody who leaves an Apple Podcast review to any of our 19 feeds, so you can get up to 19 entries in that raffle, get yourself that prize, will be eligible.
All sorts of goodies there, but there's one, Pete, that's always a freebie. It's talking to you on Twitter. How can people do so?
You can find me on Twitter at Peter, P-I-E-T-E-R, J-K-E-T-E-L-A-A-R, 11,316 followers. Can't be wrong.
And while I'm personally on Twitter's Looking Back Lost, do be in touch with the podcast. Comment on FantasticGeek.com. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Gmail, where we are Fantastic Geek as well. But wait, Pete, there's more.
Facebook.com/FantasticGeek with the PH, all one word, like it today.
Well, Pete, we have one episode left of the God Friend of Me podcast by Fantastic Geek, and we'll wrap the series this time next week. So do share those series-wide thoughts, those season-long thoughts before then. But for now, it's time for me to say adios to all the listeners and give you, Pete, the final word.
Our faith can move mountains.